Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
You're back.
I'm back.
Good to see you, Ari and Violet. How are your family?
They're good.
They made it.
They made it back.
Is Grandpa okay?
Not so much.
Not so much. Yeah. Glad you could make it tonight. Yeah. Does everybody know everybody? And Donna, I haven't seen you forever. I'm so glad you're back.
Glad to be here.
Let's do introductions around.
Judy.
Yeah.
Ross.
Don.
Janine.
Steve.
Nico.
Jeffrey.
Harvey.
Wendy.
Violet.
Angie. In case you forgot. So we're almost to the last set of chapters in here, which is about karma. So that's a very important subject for us as Zen students, and it's important to understand it in not in the old hippie way. So Katagiri has a great deal to say about it. So there are many chapters about karma, but I don't think it will take us long to go through them. So I'm going to suggest again that we begin to think about what else to study, because we'll need another subject fairly soon. And the title of the book that Marie is suggesting, it was a Dogen study by Ta-Nehisi of, do you remember the name of it?
Beyond Thinking.
Beyond Thinking. Yes. You know the advice. Think. Don't think about thinking. Beyond thinking. Nobody knows what it means. They have endless academic arguments about what that means. But it's a very interesting way of looking at Dogen's mind. You know, every time we open a book and begin to read, we're entering someone's mind and making a study. So in Dogen's case, it's a very strange and deep mind, and also very illuminating. It means we get to be a little bit more serious, but we've been very serious with this, so I don't think it will be a difference at all. So the last chapter of this set is the true meaning of effort. He talks about how we fulfill our individual desire by making a lot of effort. We run for the bus, or we order a meal, or all of the things that we do, because most of our life is based on fulfilling our desires, which are survival needs very often. We need that meal, we need that bus. But effort in the sense of Zen is a little different. It means, he says, going in the direction of wanting to save all sentient beings, not just satisfy individual desires. So it doesn't mean not having them, because we can't not have them, but it does mean that we open up our agenda hugely and take in everything else, so that we're willing to notice other people and other people's position and situation and their suffering or their joy and participate in it with them. There is no greater gift in the world than that. We can, any of us, do it easily, and yet so often we do not. And life in the city is so intense And there's so much, it feels like there's so much at stake that we just don't have the means to do that. But if we have enough practice inside us, we can do it. It's the basic reason for practice, and it opens us and it makes us available first to ourselves, and then, holy moly, everybody else is there with us too. What a big surprise. It's wonderful. He says, a Buddhist or Bodhisattva's way of life is completely different from the usual way. Even if you get a result, if you're doing sports or arts, even if you're a winner in the Olympics, you stand there with a gold thing on your hand, there's no accomplishment in our practice to show others. We don't get a gold prize at the end. We don't even get a bronze one. There's no prize at all. That's why Koban always says it's a practice of stepping down all the time. It's very humbling, really. We can't put on airs anymore. But we don't have to put on airs anymore. And boy, is that a lot of work. We can let that go and breathe more freely. You have to completely offer your body, your mind, and your whole life to the universe. And he says that's pretty hard. But it's just one breath, one moment at a time. It's not one big gesture forever. It's just being, allowing ourselves to be willing, just accepting and willing as life opens up to us. He talks about giving, that we want to give in order to get something. And this is an entirely different kind of giving, where it's not an exchange, tit for tat. It's just a completely natural flow, outflow of us. Zen practice, he said, is based on the continuous merging of wisdom and compassion. This is a very important point. We just chanted the Heart Sutra, and it's all about wisdom and compassion. Avalokiteshvara, the very first word, is the embodiment of compassion, the hearer of the cries of the world. And prajna, which is said all through there, is wisdom, the deep wisdom of us, the wisdom we can't boss around. We can't overcome it. We can't touch it in a way that rises in us as our own intelligence. He said, one by one, each of us should practice the merging of wisdom and compassion. The Bodhisattva vow to save all sentient beings isn't based on an evaluation. It's not thinking that all sentient beings need to be saved based on ideas of good or bad or right and wrong. A Bodhisattva vows to save all sentient beings because most people don't know where they are. We are already in the ocean of Buddha's world, but we don't know where the water is. We are confused. We're already great beings, but we don't realize it. So we create problems. when you help others, don't bring an evaluation based on good or bad, right or wrong. Just help all sentient beings wherever they are. All sentient beings are already Buddha. To awaken them is just to remind them of the truth. Just open your heart and be intimate with the truth. It's a little tricky. You don't want to go up to somebody and say, excuse me, but you're Buddha. It will be disturbing and counterproductive, definitely. And you don't want to say to yourself, oh, I'm Buddha. Even though those are both true. So if you carry in your heart this knowledge, it's the kind of knowledge that keeps you open to others and to yourself without any kind of pride in it at all. There's nothing to be proud of because everything and everyone is the same as we are. They say the last thing before enlightenment is this intention to compare ourselves with other people. That person is worse than I am. Or that person, oh, that person is really great. But the truth is, those things are very superficial. Basically, we're all the same. And if we can meet each other on that basis, it's wonderful. Of course, if you're in a job, you have to be careful about the hierarchy. There are certain rules that you notice and attend to. But with your own wise knowledge of the reality of the situation, that you and the boss are the same kind of Buddha, but you're serving the boss. And Zen is about service, too. It's how we serve in the world. So if we take a job, we take it in order to serve. First, serve the hierarchy and enact it in our little piece of it, and then let it flow out into the rest of the world and do the good that it does. So one of the precepts that Buddha taught was not only right effort, but also getting the right kind of work, the kind of work that can be a benefit, and wholesomeness, help people. So Roshi says, real spiritual power is the power behind power. The power behind power is the true meaning of effort. It is pure action without needing a particular goal. Instead of expecting to get a result from our effort, we give quality to our effort. We just do the best we can. And sometimes it's not very good. I mean, sometimes I know for myself that my best is not really very good. I suffer from comparing myself to my teacher, especially these days, because he was so good at calligraphy. He used black ink and the brush, and he could just make most wonderful marks on paper that never was a mistake. He could do all the things that are needed around some of the things that we do. I'm preparing for an ordination, and I'm very clumsy. And if I start thinking about how Coben would have done it, I just suffer. And then I think, okay, Annabelle, you're doing the best you can. It's okay. I think we have to talk to ourselves that way. And just forgive ourselves for not being the best of every single thing in the whole world, because we're not. We never will be. It would be really boring if we were. Just think. spiritual life is vast, he says, and you cannot get a result immediately, but you can practice it continually with full devotion in every aspect of your life. I wouldn't worry about a result. I just posted on our Facebook site an article by, can't think of his name right now. I'll think of it in a minute. But it's about enlightenment. It's and he talks about gradual and instant enlightenment. And the image that Suzuki Roshi gave of walking in the mist and not noticing that you're getting wet because you're just walking. So you're just practicing and not noticing. But as you go along, you begin to soak it up. It's a better way of thinking about it. You can't be ambitious that way for enlightenment, because that's such a losing cause. Unless you go to a monastery and put a fire on your head. If you're living your everyday life, you just want to walk in the mist. But practice as much as you can and let it soak in. It will. You will notice. You have noticed. I'm sure you have. He says, by your full devotion, and that's a cool word, devotion, true devotion. The phenomenal world and unknown time and space come together and work together in your life, right here, right now. So you could call your practice full devotion. And enjoy it that way. The human form called Buddha or Bodhisattva arises as time and space. And that form really helps people. So let's walk together with hope and make our life mature. Then by compassionate action based on wisdom, we can help all sentient beings move one step toward the future. And that's good for all of us. And then his intro to creating the future, which is the title of the fifth part of this whole book, Creating the Future, is the one about karma. And I'll read you just a little bit of what he says, and the next chapter is called What is Karma? So we'll go into it next week. He says, a theory of karma is one of Buddha's teachings on how to understand human life and how life is going toward the future. It requires us to carefully examine human life in the long term, past, present, and future. To understand karma, we have to understand the dynamic functioning of time in the appearance and disappearance of moments, the emptiness that allows life to change, and the arising of a moment of life according to interconnected and constantly changing causes and conditions. From moment to moment, we are born, exist as human beings, die, and return to the vast universe. Next moment, there is a new life. Karma works within this constant process of birth and death. If you believe that everything is produced by accident or fortuity, you cannot do anything with purpose because you think that whatever you do, everything happens by chance anyway. if you believe in fatalism, you think that everything is ordained by a pattern that was set up in the beginningless past, and no one can change it. And when you lead your life according to chance or fatalism, there is no reason to make any effort, and no beautiful dream for the future. You lose the optimistic spirit of human effort, and you become pessimistic. But when you really look at your life, you cannot say that something controls your life, because your life is yours. You still have to handle your own life every day. You can't say that everything happens by chance or fate, because you see that in many ways. You create your life by your own effort. This is something we often see in Zazen. Oh, I see. I did that. I made that happen. We don't realize sometimes how accidentally we create a situation that surprises us. But we're in charge. Even though our life itself is pouring through us in the most mysterious way. He says, when you study Buddhism and investigate karma, you don't understand exactly what karma is, because karma is very complicated. But it's not something pessimistic. If you think of it as something wrong, you are seeing karma only according to what happened in the past. You look at the past and karma becomes a monster. So you should also look at karma in the present and future. Then karma becomes something very wide and really alive. Through karma, you can understand what your destiny is. Destiny itself has no solid form. It's something you can create. You can create your life. That's why we study karma. There questions? Comments? Jeffrey?
We're all sitting in silence, so I thought I could say something.
Thank you.
So I recall when I was a very young man, before I became a student of Zen, a very early practitioner with Suzuki Roshi was having lunch with me and some friends. And I suppose she looked at me and realized I was somebody who might very well walk in that direction eventually, probably from things I had talked to her about. Anyway, she was, at the time I had a book of poetry out, and we were talking about the poem I was reading, and she looked at me and she says, you know, last night I went over and I sat with Suzuki Roshi, and he said that we are not to throw away anything in Zen. She said, no, we use all the weeds. We use everything. And of course, you know, I had no idea what that metaphor was about at all. And after 40 years of practice, and especially as I was sharing with Judy earlier about the retired life is an opportunity when we step off the hamster wheel of trying to earn a living, and we have a little bit more time for the interior work we're doing. We use everything.
Yeah.
And nothing things to be discarded, and especially on the issue of karma, this is that opportunity to use it all, to learn from it. And I think in my life how rich the weeds have been. And so I look forward to next week's discussion.
Thank you. Once we begin to recognize the weeds, it begins to make more sense. A lot of our life is spent denying them or putting them in a corner and saying, oh, that's not me, or I'm not going to deal with that. It's fine, even though it's not. So just to bring it up, Chogyam Trungpa said it's just manure. You just dig it in around you and let you grow with it. It works.
I think it's interesting. I've never seen that woman again. It was 43 years ago.
Yes.
But that has really stuck with me, those remarks that she made. I'll do shares.
Thank you for bringing her here. That was a gift. Anything else?
Another question. Was the fellow who was a Soto priest who sent that blog about enlightenment?
It's
about the gradual as
a pen.
Yes. Yes. I thought it was, I think I read it. Excellent explanation.
Yes. Yes. He's doing a whole series on Hakuin Senji.
Yes, this is Dosho Port.
Port.
Yeah.
I knew it was
this
a P, but I couldn't think of it.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, Hakuin is somebody we might study one of these days. Even though he was Rinzai priest, he was one of the very best. Deep, deep insight. He was a wonderful artist as well, and wrote some incredible material with a lot of very quirky kind of language. He was very interesting and very helpful. There's a lot about koans in there and koan study, but we do that too. We haven't done it so much here yet, but we will. So stay tuned. Are there announcements?
Yes. Saturday, we're having our half-day sit from 9 to noon. you can come for any part of the morning you are able. And I need to request someone to help set up the room here, arriving at 8:30.
Thank you.
Dependable partner. Done this before.
Talk about effort. It takes some effort just to make these little dinky sits that we do on Saturdays, but it takes some organizing and some work. So it's always wonderful when people are able to, and very encouraging when people can just volunteer. So let's do, well, we can sit a little bit longer. Why don't we do that? And then ring the bell at 8 o'clock.